logo appears in bold slanting letters over a blue planet in space. Turner. Now, a logo of a thick-maned lion framed by a ring of film. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Now, in faded black and white, titles appear. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer presents Charles Boyer as Gregory Anton, Ingrid Bergman as Paula Elquist, and Joseph Cotten as Brian Cameron in Gaslight. A brass wall sconce burns with a single flame, casting stark shadows on white-patterned wallpaper. More titles. Miss Bergman and Mr. Cotton through courtesy of David Ole Selznick, with Dame Mae Whitty as Miss Thwaites, Angela Lansbury as Nancy, and Barbara Everest as Elizabeth. Copyright 1944, Lowe's Incorporated. Screenplay by John Van Druten, Walter Reich, and John L. Balderston. Based upon the play by Patrick Hamilton. Musical score by Bronislaw Kaper. Piano solos by Jacob Gimple. Produced by Arthur Hornblow Jr. Directed by George Cukor. Now, a horse-drawn carriage rolls down a mist-shrouded cobblestone street, past pedestrians wearing capes and top hats. Using a wooden pole, a man turns on the gaslight of a street lamp, which bears a sign that reads Thornton Square. A crowd gathers in front of an elegant stone house. One man scans a newspaper headline that reads, Thornton Square Murder Unsolved, Strangler Still at Large. The article begins, The recent murder of Alice Elquist, famous prima donna. A constable patrols the crowd.
Stand back, stand back.
A young girl emerges from the house and scans the crowd with dazed, uncertain eyes. An older gentleman wearing bushy sideburns beneath his top hat leads her gently into a waiting cab, then goes back into the house and lowers the gas on the hallway chandelier. The house goes dark. He closes the front door behind him. Her face half cast in shadows, the girl stares straight ahead, ignoring the curious gawks of the onlookers gathered around. Her escort hurries to join her in the cab of the horse-drawn carriage, which pulls away from the house and heads down the elegant cobblestone street. The girl starts to lean out the window.
No, Paula. Don't look back. You've got to forget everything that's happened here. That's why you're going to Italy, to Signor Guardi. He was the best friend your aunt ever had, and he'll be yours, too. Perhaps Signor Guardi will make you into a great singer, as she was. Wouldn't you like that?
She nods weakly.
You must think of the future, dear, not the past.
Paula's light-colored eyes remain wide and somber in her finely chiseled face. Now, a sign in a window reads, Maestro Guardi, teacher of singing. Inside, Paula, now a young woman, sings to the beat conducted by an older man with flowing white hair. She clasps her hands over her heart and smiles as she sings.
No. Wait a moment, signorina, it is no use. Paula, you are not concentrating. Your mind's not on your singing. All these years you worked so hard, and now what's come over you? This opera's tragedy, signorina. A thing you seem incapable of understanding. Did you never hear your aunt sing, Lucia? You look like her.
But I don't sing like her. I know.
Paula bows her head apologetically. Guardi paces in frustration.
Signor Guardi, may I speak to you seriously? Very seriously.
Oh, maestro. Huh? It is 10 minutes to the hour. If you're not continuing the lesson, I should like to be excused. Very well, Signor Antonio. Thank you. Good afternoon, signorina.
The pianist leaves.
Now, what is it you wish to say to me? Seriously. Very seriously.
Signor Guardi, I've tried, I've worked hard, but it's no use. I haven't the voice, have I?
The trouble is not in your voice alone. Your heart is not in your singing anymore. Each time you come here now, you look happier and you sing worse. Tell me, Paula. You are in love.
Paula hesitates, then starts to smile.
Yes. Yes, it's something that has never happened. happened to me before. Something I never expected would happen, but suddenly it is as if nothing else existed. Even my music, which used to mean so much to me. Yes, you were right. My thoughts were wandering while I was singing just now. I'm too happy. That's why you said the tragedy was something I could never understand.
Oh, I'm sorry. It was cruel of me to say that. Cruel and untrue. Real tragedy has touched your life. And very deeply.
But now, if there is a chance to forget tragedy, my child, take it. Free yourself from the past. And forget your singing, too, for a while. Happiness is better than art.
Oh, dear maestro, no one has ever been as kind to me as you have since she died.
Will you let me meet the man who is taking my pupil away from me?
Oh, yes. Yes, of course.
She jumps up to leave.
Ah, you have a rendezvous with him. The moment your lesson is over, you fly to him. Is he jealous of your music? These hours you spend away from him?
Oh, dear maestro, I don't know when we'll meet again.
She kisses his cheek.
Thank you.
Wearing a neat straw skimmer over her long, wavy brown hair, Paula hurries out. The maestro smiles fondly as he watches her skip down the stairs. Smiling, she raises a parasol over her head and starts down the small village street.
Hola.
The handsome, dark-haired pianist peers out from a small pavilion. Paula's smile widens as she rushes to meet him. He takes her in his arms and kisses her.
Did you tell him?
He told me. He didn't know who.
What did he say?
He said I should take my happiness.
And will you? Now.
Why do you still hesitate, Paula?
But I don't know you. I don't know anything about you.
Nor I about you, but I want to marry you. Are you afraid?
I think I am, a little.
Of me?
No, never, but of happiness. I haven't had a lot, Gregory, and I feel I can't trust it. You must give me time to get used to the idea.
You shall have all the time you want. I've waited for you so long.
I've waited. We've only known each other 2 weeks.
I've waited all my life till now. I can wait a little longer, but it would not be easy to wait. Patient seeing you every day.
No, it won't be easy for me either. I should go away.
Go away?
By myself for a week, only a week. Just to know what I'm doing, just to be sure.
Where will you go?
I thought perhaps to the lakes.
And when will you go?
I thought tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
Oh, is that too soon?
No, the sooner you go, the sooner you will come back. But while you're away, never forget for one moment that I'm here, waiting, and in love with you.
Paula smiles and nods, then reluctantly pulls herself away. She pauses at the doorway of the pavilion.
Oh, my dearest.
Paula comes back for another kiss, then walks away beaming. Gregory smiles and waves from his hiding place. Later, on a train, Paula shares a car with a plump white-haired woman who sits immersed in a book. Paula stirs from her daydreaming.
Oh, my goodness! Oh, good gracious!
The woman sees her staring.
Oh, it's so exciting.
Your book?
Yes. It's all about a girl who marries a man. And what do you think? He's got 6 wives buried in the cellar.
That seems a lot.
Yes, and I'm only at page 200, so I'm sure there's still more to come. Oh, it's a wonderful book.
Oh, it sounds a little gruesome.
Yes, well, I'm afraid I enjoy a good murder now and then. My brother always calls me Bloodthirsty Bessie. Have a biscuit, dear.
Thank you.
Digestive biscuits. Unpleasant name, isn't it? I always call them Diggy Biscuits. I never travel without them. You're not English, are you?
No. I was brought up there. My aunt lived in London.
Are you on your way there now?
No. I'm going to Lake Como.
Oh? All by yourself?
Yes, all by myself.
Oh, but is that wise?
I don't think any harm will come to me.
Well, I'm going to London. I must be in London for the spring. The crocuses, you know, and the daffodils and the tulips. The gardens are so beautiful in the spring. I go and say good morning to my flowers in Thornton Square every day.
Thornton Square?
Yes, that's where I live, number 16. Do you know it?
Paula swallows hard.
I know Thornton Square.
Do you know anyone living there?
I used to, not anymore.
I wonder who that could be. I know almost everyone who lives there now. We're all so very friendly, you know, popping in and out of each other's houses. What number did your friends live at?
I'm afraid I don't remember.
No, we had a real live murder there.
Yes, I'd heard of it.
Unfortunately, it's before I went to live there. Just the year before, 10 years ago, at number 9, a famous singer called Alice Alquist. Have another biscuit, dear.
No, thank you.
It was a most mysterious case. They never found out who killed her. They never even found a motive. I've tried to get in the house many and many a time. I think it'll be so exciting, don't you? I mean, just to see. All's just as it used to be. Nothing's been changed. All the furniture and everything.
I think we're getting into Como.
Oh, so we are. Is anyone meeting you?
No.
Oh, dear. Well, you will be careful, won't you?
I will.
Goodbye, my dear. Oh, come and see me if you're ever in London. My name is Thwaites, Miss Thwaites. And I'll point out the window of the room in number 9 where it happened. You can see it from my drawing room.
A man's hand takes Paula's arm. She turns and smiles with relief.
You're not angry with me.
Angry? If you hadn't come, I should have sent for you.
Paula throws her arms around Gregory's shoulders in a passionate embrace. The train starts to pull away.
Where?
Miss Thwaites frowns in disapproval, then peers eagerly out the window for a better view. Now, in a gracious stone villa built on the edge of a misty lake, a moored skiff reads Hotel del Lago. Wearing a long smoking jacket belted around his waist, Gregory emerges through a set of French doors onto the veranda. He scans his lush surroundings, then returns to the door and parts the curtains. He pauses, then smiles when he sees Paula smiling up at him from the pillows of their brass bed.
Come and look at the morning.
Wearing a long, filmy white nightgown and her hair down around her shoulders, Paula crosses the bedroom and folds herself into his arms. Gregory kisses her in a close embrace, then wraps one arm around her shoulders and leads her out onto the sunny veranda.
Aren't you cold like this? What were you dreaming of?
Our life together.
And how do you see it?
I saw all the places where we'll be together. Lovely places like this.
I was thinking of our life together too. Only I heard it in music. Something that I want to write.
Yes, what?
The whole thing is alive with happiness. I want the feeling of the early morning.
This morning?
Yes, with the sun rising, lighting your hair as it is now. I don't know how it ends. Perhaps it never ends until I do.
Gregory caresses Paula's hair and gazes into her face, then kisses her passionately. Paula hugs him close.
When will you start on it?
Oh, someday. After we've had our honeymoon and settled down in a home of our own somewhere.
Where?
Where would you like us to settle?
I haven't thought. Paris, perhaps.
Paris?
Mm-hmm.
Rome? How would you feel about London?
London?
Her happy smile fades. Gregory sees her downcast expression and forces a smile.
If you won't laugh at me, I'd like to tell you something.
I won't laugh at you. What is it?
Oh, it's an idea. A silly idea that's been with me for years. I was in London once in the winter. It seemed to me there was no city in the world that was colder to the homeless or that could be warmer to the ones who had a home. How I used to long for a home of my own in one of those quiet houses in the little London squares. With a woman I should one day come to love. Could we settle down in London? Not in a house in a square, perhaps.
He sees her haunted gaze.
Paula, why do you look like that?
Because there is a house in a square.
What house?
9 Thornton Square. She left it to me.
She? Oh, you mean Alice Alquist?
She nods tightly.
She was my mother's sister. My mother died when I was born. I don't know anything about her or my father. I live with my aunt always as if I were her own. Then after it happened, I never went back.
Paula buries her head against Gregory's chest, then wraps her arms around his waist.
That house comes into my dreams sometimes, a house of horror.
Gregory strokes her hair with a distracted frown.
It's strange. I haven't dreamed of it since I've known you. I haven't been afraid since I've known you.
Afraid?
Yes, for years I've been afraid of something nameless, something ever since she died. You've cast out fear for me.
No, Paula, if it were true, it would make me very happy.
It is true. I've found peace in loving you. I could even face that house with you.
Oh, no, no, Paula, beloved. I would not ask that.
Yes, yes, you shall have your dream. You shall have your house in a square.
Later, in Thornton Square, Miss Thwaites bustles through the park.
Good morning, daffodils. Good morning, tulips. Good morning. Oh, Daffy, dear. Oh, Percy. There it is, dear. Good morning.
She spots a city worker kneeling on the sidewalk in front of the Alquist house.
What are you doing there, my good man?
Turning on the water in number 9, ma'am.
9? Why 9?
Orders, ma'am.
Well, it must be going to be occupied at last, after all these years.
Wouldn't care to live in there myself.
I don't know about living there, but I would like to get a peep inside.
She peers curiously at a white-haired gentleman who stops in front of the house and checks his pocket watch. He smiles and tips his hat as a carriage rolls to a stop at the curb. Paula and Gregory step out.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We're not late, are we?
Oh, not at all. I've only been here a moment. Good morning, Mr.
Good morning.
Miss Thwaites recognizes Paula.
Oh, it's you. Don't you remember me? In the train in Italy last month. Dinky biscuits.
Oh, yes, of course.
Don't tell me you're coming to live in number 9.
Yes, I am.
Oh, Paula, we mustn't keep Mr. Muffling waiting.
No, I'm sorry, I must go now. Perhaps we can...
I'll call directly you're settled. That's my house over there, the one with the pink curtains. Well, goodbye for the present. Goodbye.
Goodbye. I'm so glad we are to be neighbors.
Oh, so am I. Oh.
This lock needs oiling. Now, if there's anything further I can do, let me hear from you. Good day.
Good day.
Good day, Miss Denton.
Gregory takes Paula's hand.
Now, Paula.
He pushes open the front door. Inside, the house lies in cobwebs and shadows. A stairway directly across from the front door leads upstairs. Doors to several rooms line either side of the front hall, and a light shines from the entrance to a lower floor. Paula leans fearfully against Gregory, who gulps slightly and leads her inside.
Is this the dining room?
Yes. There's a little study beyond it.
And the drawing room is upstairs?
Yes.
Gregory starts upstairs. Paula hesitates, then follows him. Gregory opens the sliding doors to a shadowy drawing room filled with statuary, cloth-covered furniture, and knick-knacks.
Come, Paula, don't stand there in the doorway.
Will you light the gas, please?
Gregory searches his pocket for a match, then finds one and lights the flame in two glass globes on either side of an ornate mantel. Shadowed behind a mesh veil, Paula's eyes dart nervously around the enormous room. Chandeliers hang from the ceiling, covered with dust cloths. A canvas sheet obscures a large painting hanging over the fireplace.
Oh, Gregory.
It's a very handsome room.
Yes, but to see it like this... I remember parties in this room when it was full of flowers and light.
Those must have been wonderful days.
Oh, it's all dead in here. The whole place seems to smell of death.
There. It'll all be fresh again in a moment.
Gregory opens a window, then spots a curio case with a shattered door.
That's where she kept her little treasures, all the things she collected on her tours around the world.
The glass is broken.
It was broken that night. All the things were disarranged, but there was nothing missing. Oh, I know all these by heart. It used to be one of my great treats when she would unlock them and take them out and tell me all their stories.
Be careful, dearest.
This glove. She wore it in Romeo and Juliet at the Command performance at Covent Garden.
A white embroidered glove.
Gounod signed it for her afterwards. I never knew what happened to the other glove. I used to ask her sometimes, but she'd only laugh and say she'd given it away. very great admirer. She would never tell me who.
I wish I could have seen her.
Oh, let me show her to you.
Paula crosses to the fireplace and tears the canvas away from the painting it conceals. Gregory gasps at the portrait of a beautiful young woman carrying a scepter and wearing ornate crown and costume.
That says the Empress Theodora. That was her greatest role. When she sang it in St. Petersburg, the Tsar used to come to every performance.
She was very beautiful.
Very much like you.
It was there that I found her. There in front of the fire. Under her own portrait. I was in bed and something woke me. I've never known what. I came running down the stairs. Frightened, as if I knew what had happened. She had been strangled.
Paula's wide, haunted eyes glitter with horror at the memory.
She had been strangled. Her lovely face was all... No, I can't stay.
Paula rushes toward the door, then stops herself. Gregory forces a cheerful smile.
Well then, how would it be if we took away all these things that remind you so of her? The painting, all this furniture. Shut it away, so you can't even see it. Suppose we make it a new house, with new things, for a new, beautiful life for us.
Yes, and then later we'll have people here and parties again.
His smile disappears.
Oh, don't you want to?
Later, yes. But not just at once. Let us have our honeymoon here by ourselves for a little longer.
Yes, I only...
I know. Later. Now, where shall we put all these things?
Well, there is an attic under the roof. All our trunks are up there and all our costumes.
Well, then we'll put all these there too. And then we'll board it up so you'll never have to see it again. Never even think of it.
Oh, that piano traveled with her everywhere in the great days. It can need tuning terribly. Oh, look, here's some of her music. Her score of Theodora, just as she left it.
We'll send those upstairs with all the rest.
No, not her music. Perhaps later I might like to study again. I'd like to have her scores to study from. What makes you play that?
Why not?
That was her great song. She always used it in her concerts for her last encore. It was everybody's favorite.
As Paula flips through the score, a piece of paper flutters to the ground. She stoops to pick it up, then starts to read the handwritten note.
Here's an old letter. Dear Miss Ahlquist, I beg of you to see me just once more. I have followed you to London.
Gregory's face turns hard and blank.
It was written 2 days before she was murdered.
Where did you find that?
In this score, she must have left it there. It was written by somebody called Sergius Bauer.
Give it to me.
He snatches it from her hands.
Gregory, what is it?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be so violent. It's just that...
Why does this letter upset you so?
Oh, it's not the letter. It's just that I'm upset for you. All these things reminding you of her. You said that you had lost your fears, and now everything you touch here brings them back home, my dearest. While you're afraid of anything, there cannot be any happiness for us. You must forget her.
No, not her. Only what happened to her.
Another day. Miss Thwaites paces the sidewalk across from number 9 when she spots a woman wearing a white cap and carrying a grocery basket.
Elizabeth! I say, Elizabeth!
Good afternoon, Elizabeth.
Oh, it's you, miss. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. The house is looking very nice now.
What's that, miss?
I said the house looks very nice now, from the outside.
Oh, yes, miss.
I expect you're glad you got rid of the workmen at last.
Well, yes, miss.
Do you think that Mr. and Mrs. Anton will be ready to receive callers soon?
Well, I couldn't say, miss, I'm sure. We haven't had no visitors yet. Master says seeing people isn't good for her. She hasn't been feeling too well lately.
Oh? I'm sorry to hear that.
What's that, miss?
I said this fine summer weather we are having ought to do her good.
Oh, yes, miss. They're going out this afternoon. Oh. First time for some while. Good day, miss.
Good day. Oh, what lovely looking strawberries. Well, I never get big ones like that. I think I'll just taste one for luck. Good afternoon.
Later, inside the house.
If you have your bags with you, you can start immediately.
Thank you, sir. They're downstairs, sir.
Then everything is arranged. Your wages will be £16 a year.
Yes, sir. I understand all right, sir.
Oh, just one more thing. I don't want you to bother your mistress about anything, ever. If you have any questions, just come to me.
Yes, sir. That'll suit me, sir.
Well, then you'll remember it. Your predecessor did not. That's why she left. It may seem a little unusual, but your mistress is inclined to be rather highly strung. Oh, Elizabeth, come in. This is Elizabeth, the cook.
Hello.
You'll find that she's a little deaf.
Hello.
Oh, Elizabeth, this is our new housemaid. I was explaining our duties to her. She'll be down in a moment.
Very good, sir. I'll see you downstairs.
The girl gives a sullen pout.
She's a tartar, ain't she?
What do you mean by that?
Oh, you know, strict lot. I'm not going to sleep in the same room with her. See the way she looked at me?
Don't you think perhaps your costume might have something to do with it?
A tight dress and feather boa.
What's the matter with it?
Well, it's a little, shall we say, loud. I hope you're not a flighty girl, Lucy.
My name's Nancy, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry, Nancy. Are you?
I don't think so, sir.
I'm glad to hear that. Your mistress is very particular about everything being very correct.
Is she, sir?
Yes. And so am I. Oh, Paula.
Nancy checks her reflection in the mirror and follows him out.
This is our new housemaid.
Paula hesitates under Nancy's defiant glare.
Oh, how do you do?
I'm all right, ma'am.
You can go now, Nancy.
Very good, sir.
Paula wears a white lace gown with a bustle and a flowery hat.
She seems a nice girl.
I'm glad. I hope I haven't kept you waiting. I had to go back for the guidebook.
You look like a summer's day.
Because I'm happy. We are going out and I'm going to show you London.
Do you know what day today is?
Yes.
3 months ago today, we came out of that little church by the lake, man and wife. I have a present for you, Paula.
Gregory.
A cameo pin.
Oh, where did you find anything so beautiful?
It belonged to my mother, and before that to her mother, and now it belongs to you.
Oh, I shall wear it always. Always, oh, my dear.
She hurries to a mirror to put it on.
Oh, how sweet of you to give me this. Oh, it...
I'm afraid the pin is not very strong.
No.
I'll have it mended. Yes. You better not wear it until I have. You might lose it. You know, you are inclined to lose things, Paula.
I am? No, I didn't realize that.
Oh, just little things. I'll put it in your bag for safekeeping.
He drops the pin in her purse.
There. Now, you'll remember where it is.
Oh, don't be silly. Of course I'll remember.
Oh, I was teasing you, my dear.
Outside, a flower seller holds up her wares.
Look.
Sweet blooming lavender.
That's London.
It's music.
Good afternoon, Wilkins.
Good afternoon, ma'am. It's nice to see you getting out again. Where to, ma'am?
We're going to the Tower of London.
Very good, ma'am. The Tower of London it is.
The carriage pulls away. Inside, Nancy interrogates Elizabeth.
What's the matter with the mistress? She don't look ill to me, is she?
I don't know. Not as I can see. But the master keeps telling her she is.
Later at the Tower of London.
And here, ladies and gentlemen, we have the axe of the headsman and the execution block. These are the originals with which such historic persons as Lady Jane Grey and Queen Catherine Howard was beheaded within these precincts. The victim kneeling, lady's head upon the block, fitted his neck into the small hollowed-out space designed to receive it, whereupon the axe descended, severing the head from the torso with one blow, or in unlucky cases, two.
Paula pulls a handkerchief out of her purse and dabs her nose. She goes to put it back and pauses. With a quick sideways glance at Gregory, she steps to one side and rummages more deeply in her purse. With a panicked frown, she starts to pull things out. She hurries upstairs into a dark, private corner of the torture chamber. We see her shadow as she searches. Gregory follows her.
Oh, Paula?
Yes?
Here you are. I wonder what had become of you.
Oh, it was so close in there. Well, let's go out into the sunshine.
Later, they stroll outside, arm in arm. A lean, handsome young man walks toward them, accompanied by a young girl and a little boy in knickers.
Are we going to see the doctor's chamber?
Certainly, I think it's right over here.
He freezes at the sight of Paula. His mouth drops open in astonishment. He raises his top hat as Paula and Gregory walk past. Paula responds with a slight smile and nod. Gregory glares suspiciously at him.
Uncle Brian, what's the matter? You look as if you've seen a ghost.
That's exactly what I thought I'd seen.
There's no such thing as a ghost.
I know. I just thought I saw someone I know as dead.
I have no idea who he is, Gregory. He seemed to know me and...
Do you usually bow to people you don't know?
No, I suppose that met him somewhere.
Are you telling me the truth?
Of course. Why should I lie? I don't know who he is.
Yet you smile at him. Why?
I tell you, I wasn't thinking. I don't know why I did it.
Like the other things.
What other things?
Oh, nothing. Only I've been noticing, Paula, that you've been forgetful lately.
Forgetful?
Well, losing things and... Oh, no, don't look so worried, Paula. It's nothing. You get tired.
Yes, that's probably what it is. I get tired. I'm tired now. Can't we go home?
Oh, no, we still have the Crown Jewels to see. They're in that building over there.
How do you know?
What did you say?
I said, how do you know where they are? You haven't been here before.
The guide told us inside. Are you becoming suspicious as well as absent-minded, Paula?
No, of course not, Gregory.
Later, they stand in front of a display case containing the crown jewels. Gregory begins to read from the guide, then raises his eyes to stare at the treasures, reciting from memory.
The Koh-i-Noor, or Mountain of Light, is the most famous diamond in the world. The Imperial Steed Crown.
That's that one.
Yes, I know. It was made for the coronation of Queen Victoria. Among the jewels it contains are the ruby of the Black Prince, the size of a hen's egg, the Stuart Sapphire, which was among the jewels James II took with him when he fled to France, and the diamonds and pearls from the earrings of Queen Elizabeth.
He jerks himself out of his trance.
Jewels are wonderful things. They have a life of their own.
Oh, Gregory, can't we go home now?
Of course, my dear, I'll take you home.
As Paula leads him away, Gregory continues to stare hungrily at the crowns, orbs, and jewelry. The handsome young Brian stands with his back toward them. He turns slightly as they pass. At home, Elizabeth and Nancy carry a pile of linens upstairs.
That's the mistress's room. That's the master's. Now, we've got all this to see to. Have you got the sheets there?
Well, I could have sworn they'd do more than that, but...
What's up there?
Never mind about up there. Old floor's been boarded off.
Ah!
That's the way the master wanted it.
Huh?
Downstairs, the front door opens.
You were right. There is nothing more beautiful than London in sunshine.
Well, I'm sorry I spoiled the day by bringing you home so soon.
Paula searches her purse.
You should lie down and rest for a little, Paula.
Yes.
Would you like me to stay with you and not go out this evening?
Oh, no. You go and work as usual. Well, can you really work in that little room you rented? I wish you'd let me see it and make it attractive for you.
I never notice my surroundings when I'm working.
Paula hurries upstairs with a worried frown.
Oh, Paula, you might give me your brooch so I can have it repaired. What's the matter? Anything wrong?
No, it's... Oh, Gregory, I can't find it.
What?
Gregory starts toward her.
I missed it when we were in the tower.
She digs frantically in her purse.
I must turn everything out.
Paula dumps the contents of her purse onto the stairway and searches through the pile in vain.
I know it was here. I can't understand it. I couldn't have lost it. It must be here.
I'm sure it's there.
It's not.
Oh, Paula, didn't I tell you? How did you come to lose it?
Paula grows flustered under Gregory's steady stare.
I must have pulled it out with something, I suppose. Oh, I'm terribly sorry, Gregory. Please forgive me.
Oh, forgive, my dear. It's not as serious as that. It's not valuable.
But your present to me, your mother's brooch, and I wanted to wear it always. I don't remember opening my bag. Well, I suppose I must have. You did put it in there.
Don't you even remember that?
Yes. Yes, of course I do. Well, suddenly I'm beginning not to trust my memory at all.
Paula, I tell you, you're just tired, that's all. It doesn't mean anything. I'm sure it doesn't. Don't worry so, Paula. Don't worry.
With wide, bewildered eyes, Paula bows her head and continues upstairs. Her husband watches her with a cold frown. Later, wearing a brocade dressing gown, Paula prepares for bed.
Nancy, has the master left?
Yes, ma'am, a little while ago.
Please see that he has plenty of coal on the fire in his room, won't you?
He already told me that, ma'am.
Nancy deposits the coverlid on a chair and walks away. Paula winces to herself. Overhead, the lights in the chandelier grow dim, then return to full strength. Paula frowns in confusion.
Nancy, did you turn the gas up in there?
Turn it up?
No, why? Well, I thought it went down in here as if you had.
I never touched it.
But this went down.
Paula examines the chandelier.
Well, perhaps Elizabeth lit another jet in the kitchen.
Couldn't have been her, ma'am. She's been in bed for an hour. I could hear her snoring.
That's odd.
Paula notices Nancy's condescending stare.
Good night, Nancy.
Good night, ma'am.
The blonde, shapely young maid leaves the room. Her brow creased in a tense frown, Paula's eyes shift back and forth in confusion. Paula freezes. Her gaze drifts up to the ceiling. Her mouth drops open in astonishment. Daytime in the park. Brian stands and watches the door of number 9. Miss Thwaites bustles past and sees him staring.
Yes, that's it.
I beg your pardon?
I said that's it. That's the Elquist house.
Oh, yes. Yes.
It happened in the drawing room, upstairs. That window. I live just across the square. My name is Thwaites. Miss Thwaites.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Perhaps you could tell me, has the house been occupied long?
Oh, about 4 or 5 months now.
Come along.
You don't happen to know who's living in the house, do you?
Yes, a farm couple. Anton's the name. Something mysterious there.
What do you mean, mysterious?
Never have visitors. Never go out anywhere. At least, she doesn't.
I think you're wrong, madam.
Well, there don't seem to be as many as usual here today. Come along, pigeons. Come along, sparrows. What did you say?
I said you seem to be wrong about her not going out.
Across the street, Paula steps out the front door wearing a ruffled hat and fitted silk dress with a bustle. She smiles slightly at the sunshine, then hesitates, hurries back to the front door, and rings the bell.
How very surprising.
Oh, it's you, ma'am. I never knew you'd gone out.
Well, I just went for a walk, but it looks as if it might rain, so I thought I should have my umbrella.
Of course, ma'am.
Nancy eyes her suspiciously.
Suppose the master comes back and asks where you've gone.
Well, tell him I just went for a walk.
By yourself, ma'am?
Of course, why not?
Suppose the master asks where.
Well, tell him I just...
With a sad, defeated frown, Paula bows her head and retreats inside. As she rushes upstairs, Nancy closes the door.
Now, do you see what I mean? Goes out, goes back, goes in. Oh, definitely odd. It's an odd household, too. That maidservant, most impertinent. I can't get a thing out of her. She won't talk to me, though she would quick enough if I wore trousers. The way she carries on with that policeman on the beat, it's scandalous. There. That's all there is. Fly away, pigeons. More tomorrow.
She turns to find Brian gone.
Well!
Later, Brian climbs out of a horse-drawn cab in front of a building with a sign that reads Scotland Yard.
Special edition, read all about it.
He strides up the stairs, ignoring the newspaper vendor.
You want to get me a paper? Very good, sir, thank you.
Inside, Brian opens a metal box marked Alice Alquist.
I want you to put that file back where you got it.
I tell you, the case is dead. And I'm not going to have it all dug up again for nothing. Do you understand? You've no right to go through that file. But he has no right to let you get at it.
I'm sorry, General. Mr. Cameron here is your assistant.
Well, then it's his job to assist me. Not go digging into 10-year-old cases with wild suspicions of his own. Now then, Budge, you get along.
Very good, General.
The commissioner ushers him out. Brian pours over evidence from the file.
What's your interest in this case, anyway?
Well, it was a rather a famous case, and it impressed me very much at the time. Besides, well, I once met Alice Alquist. I was taken to hear her at a command performance when I was 12 years old. And afterwards to meet her in the artist room. I know it sounds silly, but I still think she was the most beautiful woman I ever saw, and I've never forgotten her. And now...
Now you've seen someone you think looks like her.
Living in the same house.
Well, why shouldn't she? If she's the niece, the house probably belongs to her. And if you're trying to make the acquaintance of a pretty woman, you've no right to use official business as an excuse.
Oh, it's not that, sir. But I tell you, sir, I have a feeling there's something peculiar going on there. Mm-hmm. Perhaps even more than peculiar.
Now, look here, Brown. Once and for all, the case was given up as hopeless. As for the matter of the jewels, that was dropped by order of, a most important personage.
Jewels? There's nothing here about jewels.
The commissioner squirms under Brian's gaze.
Well, there were some jewels. They were given to her by, by somebody very highly placed. Some of the crown jewels of his, of another country, as a matter of fact.
What happened to them?
They, disappeared.
That's why she was murdered.
Well, that was the official theory. Though what the murderer wanted the jewels for, I can't imagine. They were much too famous for him to be able to sell them anywhere.
Have they never shown up since?
Not as far as I've been informed.
Well, then, where are they?
I don't know. The murder part of the case was pursued to the utmost. As you can see for yourself from that file, there was never any case against anyone anyway. There were the usual blind alley suspects. You've read all their names there in that stuff. And there was never anything to prove against any of them. Now, run along. There's a good fellow. I'm busy.
Very well, sir.
Brian retrieves his coat, derby, and umbrella.
Good day, sir.
He leaves the commissioner's office and shuts the door behind him. A young mustached constable in a uniform walks past. Brian gives him an absent nod.
Afternoon, Mr. Cameron.
Brian stops and stares.
Williams. Did you want me, sir?
Yes. Tell me, you're not a married man, are you?
No, sir.
Where are you on duty now?
Down in the East End, sir.
How would you like a more fashionable locality?
I'd like it very much, sir.
Well, we'll see what can be done about it. Don't say anything to anybody for the moment.
Later in Thornton Square. Two peddlers wheel a crank organ down the street on a wagon. In number 9, Paul appears timidly down from the drawing room window through a crack in the lace curtains. She watches them pass, then lets the curtain fall. Paula tiptoes fearfully around Gregory, who sits dozing in an ornate satin armchair. She peeks into the fireplace, where a blaze dwindles low, then sneaks a guilty look at her husband and reaches for a fire poker. Paula shoots a startled glance at her husband, then sinks onto the sofa and wraps her arms around herself against the cold.
If you want coal on the fire, Paula, why don't you ring for the maid?
Oh, I'm sorry I didn't mean to wake you. Go back to sleep, dear.
No, Paula. Now that you have wakened me, we might as well be comfortable. Ring for the maid.
Oh, I can put it on myself.
Paula, we've had this subject out before.
Paula freezes. Gregory frowns scornfully.
Please, pull the bell cord.
It seems so unnecessary.
What do you suppose the servants are for, Paula? Answer me. What do you suppose the servants are for?
To do things to serve us, I suppose.
Exactly.
It's only that I think we should consider them a little. Oh, Gregory. Don't be cross with me.
I'm not cross with you, sir. Oh, a lot of things.
Nancy enters the drawing room.
Did you ring, sir?
No, your mistress rang.
Paula lowers her eyes to the floor.
Well, go on, my dear. Why don't you tell Nancy what you rang for?
A little coal on the fire, please, Nancy. Very good, madam.
With her back turned to them, Paula pretends to read.
You're looking very pretty this afternoon, Nancy. You know that?
I don't know it at all, sir, I'm sure.
Tonight is your night out, isn't it?
That's right, sir.
Whom are you meeting tonight? You might like the guys too, Nancy. I see they've changed the policeman on the beat. Is his heart going to be added to the list of those you've broken?
I didn't know I'd broken any.
Oh, no, I'm sure that's not true. And that complexion of yours.
He lights his cigarette with her match.
That's something that's not quite true either. Oh, you do it very cleverly, I grant you.
Paula stiffens over her book.
In fact, I was wondering whether you might not care to pass some of your secrets on to your mistress and help her get rid of her pallor.
Sure, I'd be very pleased to do anything I can, sir. Will that be all you're wanting?
Yes, except tea when it's ready.
Very good, sir.
Nancy leaves the room. Eyebrows arched in a haughty frown, Gregory glances at Paula over a magazine.
Gregory, how can you talk to Nancy like that?
But my dear, you seem so anxious to regard the servants as your equals. I thought I would treat her as one. Besides, I was only trifling with her.
No wonder that girl despises me the way you encourage her in.
Despises you? Whatever makes you think that?
Her whole manner. The way she talks to me, the way she looks at me.
Looks at you? Paula, I hope you're not starting to imagine things again. You're not, are you, Paula?
Of course I'm not.
I hope you're not, but if you start talking about the way Nancy looks at you, turn away, Paula. We must have this out. Do you really think Nancy despises you? Well, answer me, Paula. Do you?
No, Gregory.
Oh, I'm glad of that. It hurts me when you're ill and fanciful. Come in! Well, what is it now?
If you please, sir, Miss Thwaites is downstairs. She wanted to know if the mistress was at home.
Oh.
You mean that old busybody from across the square?
Yes, sir. She has a nephew with her.
Well, I don't think we need bore ourselves with them. Tell her your mistress is not at home.
Oh, Gregory, really? She's been...
My dear, if you let her in once, you'll always have her here.
But she has called so many times, and we've never been at home to her.
I do not want people all over this house!
Paula recoils, her eyes wide with shock. Gregory forces a smile.
Bringing her family with her. You tell her, Miss Twitz, that your mistress is sorry, but she's not well enough to see her.
Very good, sir.
Paula steps carefully around Gregory as he opens the piano.
Gregory, why did you do that? I would have liked to have seen her.
But, my dear, I thought you were only trying to be polite. Why didn't you tell me you really wanted to see her?
Well, I couldn't be in front of that girl.
Oh, now, you must get over this ridiculous fear of the servants. Now, if you really wanted to see her, all you had to say was show her at Nancy, wasn't it? Wasn't it?
Yes, but I'm sorry, miss. That's all I know. The mistress isn't well enough to receive anyone.
Please tell her how sorry we are.
Miss Thwaites peers curiously upstairs. Brian takes her arm.
Come along, Auntie dear.
Brian half leads, half drags Miss Thwaites toward the door. She gives Nancy a disapproving once-over. Nancy closes the door behind them. Upstairs, Paula sits with her head bowed. She folds her hands in her lap, wringing them nervously.
You know, you wouldn't have had time to see them anyway. You have to dress, do your hair.
Why?
We're going out tonight.
Paula starts to smile.
We are? Well, you didn't tell me. What have I forgotten?
With her hand over her heart, she darts a quick, panicky look at Gregory, then approaches him from behind with worried, hesitant steps. Gregory enjoys a private smile.
Don't you think this is charming? It's from the new operetta, The Gaiety. I wish I could write tunes like Strauss. Voila, you silly child. Don't look like that. Of course you haven't forgotten anything.
This is my surprise for you.
We're going to the theater tonight.
A tremulous smile of relief breaks across Paula's worried face.
Oh, Greg. Oh, no. Oh, how wonderful.
She throws herself into his arms.
And you thought I was being cruel to
no,
you.
No, you're not cruel.
Keeping people away from you. Making you a prisoner.
Oh, you're the kindest man in the world. Oh, I'm sorry.
He embraces her in a deep, passionate kiss. Paula smiles dreamily.
Oh, I'm so happy.
She wraps her arms around his neck from behind. His eyes widen in a crazed expression, which fades into a small, tight smile. Paula starts to waltz ecstatically around the drawing room. Gregory's smile disappears as he spots something on the wall opposite the piano.
Oh, Gregory. What's the matter?
He turns to her with an agitated sigh.
Paula, I don't want to upset you. If you will put things right when I'm not looking, we'll assume it did not happen.
But what? Gregory, what? Oh, please don't turn your back on me. What has happened?
You mean you don't know?
No, I...
Look.
Gregory points to the wall. With wide, frightened eyes, Paula backs slowly into the corner, then turns. A picture hook hangs empty. The wallpaper is bright and clean, where a picture had covered it before.
Yes. The little picture has been taken down. Who took it down? Why has it been taken down?
Why indeed? Why was it taken down before? Will you please get it from wherever you've hidden it and put it back in its place?
But I haven't hidden it. I swear I haven't. Why should I? Why should... Don't look at me like that. Someone else must have done it.
Gregory reaches for the bell cord.
No, don't ring. Oh, please don't ring, Gregory. Don't shame me before the servants.
Will you please stop being hysterical?
He tugs the silk sash. Oh.
Now, sit down and calm yourself before they come. We must get to the bottom of this once and for all. Please come in, Elizabeth. Elizabeth, do you notice anything missing from this room?
Missing, sir? No, I don't think so, sir.
Look carefully on the walls.
Gregory lights a lamp near the missing picture.
Well?
Well, there's a little picture missing, sir.
Exactly. Did you dig it away?
No, sir.
Have you ever taken it down from where it belongs?
Oh, no, sir. Why ever should I?
Why, indeed.
Gregory glances at Paula, who shrinks under his gaze.
Elizabeth. You go to church, don't you?
To what, sir?
Church!
Yes, sir.
Please kiss this Bible as a solemn oath that you've told the truth.
With a puzzled frown, Elizabeth places a quick kiss on the leather-bound Bible.
Thank you, Elizabeth. You may go now. And send Nancy in here at once. Nancy!
Yes, sir.
No, Gregory, no. Not that girl. I'll say anything. I'll say that I did it. I did it, Gregory. I'm not having
Paula, please, have the goodness to control yourself. This is painful enough without you making it worse. Now, Paula, please come back. Since you have thrown suspicion on the servants, they must be cleared of it. Now, sit down. Did you hear what I said? Well, sit down. Come here, Nancy.
Nancy enters the room. Paula sits on the corner of a chaise, her head bowed in misery.
Nancy, a picture has been taken down from the wall there.
Cool, so it has. What's another rum gal?
I did not ask for any comments on your part. I want to know whether it was you who took the picture down.
course it wasn't, sir. What would I want to take it down for?
Shall I ask her to kiss the Bible, Paula? Or will you accept her word?
Of course I'll accept it. Let her go.
Very well. You may go, Ness.
Watching Paula out of the corner of her eye, Nancy leaves. Paula raises her head to Gregory's accusing frown.
Give me that Bible!
She lunges for the Bible and kisses it.
There, do you see? I swear on the Bible I didn't take that picture down.
Go and look for that picture.
Gregory arches his eyebrows in a cold, deadpan glare. His lower lip twitches in irritation. Paula bows her head and starts slowly toward the door. Staring straight ahead as if in a trance, she leaves the room and starts upstairs with measured mechanical steps. When she reaches the landing, she turns the corner, then stops. Her shoulders sag. Without looking, she reaches behind a bronze statue and pulls out a small framed painting. Paula offers it to Gregory, her face blank with a stunned expression.
So you knew where it was all the time.
Paula stares at the painting and blinks in hurt and confusion.
No. Oh, I didn't know. I only looked there because that's where it was found twice before. I didn't know, Gregory. I didn't know. I didn't.
Now, Paula, I think you better go to your room.
We're not going to the theater?
Oh, my dear, I'm afraid you're far from well enough for the theater. Now, come.
Gregory leads her upstairs.
Gregory, if it was I who took that picture down.
If
it was I who took it down the other times, if I do all these senseless, meaningless things, so meaningless, why should I take a picture down? Well, then I don't know what I do anymore.
I know, Paula. That's just the trouble.
But then, if that's true, then you must be gentle with me. You must bear with me, please.
Gregory pauses, then pulls away.
Oh, please, Gregory, please.
Paula sags against the banister.
Now, come, Paula.
She trails after him obediently.
You better go to your room.
What are you going to do?
I'm going out to work and forget all this.
No, please, don't leave me here all by myself now. I get so frightened when I'm here alone and you go out night after night.
Frightened? You never told me that before.
But I'm telling you now, I'm frightened of the house. I hear noises and footsteps. I imagine things that are people over the house. I'm frightened of myself too. Gregory, please. Please don't leave me. Stay with me. Gregory, take me in your arms, please. Please, please, take me in your arms, Gregory, please, please.
I hope to find you better in the morning.
Leaving Paula inside, Gregory closes the bedroom door behind him and starts downstairs. His shadow grows long and distorted in the dimly lit hallway. Gregory takes a cigarette from the pocket of his smoking jacket and lights it, then strides into his study and closes the door. He strips off his jacket and turns toward a mirror. Nancy appears in the reflection, standing behind him.
Seems to be getting worse, doesn't she, sir?
You will please not refer to your mistress as she.
Nancy holds up his coat.
Thank you, Nancy.
Going to work on your tunes again tonight, sir. You're always working, aren't you?
Yes. What are you doing with your evening out?
Oh, I'm going to a music hall. Up in a balloon, boys, up.
I've never been to an English music hall.
Oh, you don't know what you've missed, sir. Up in a balloon, boys, up in a balloon. You like it a lot, sir.
Oh, we must see about that. And whom are you going to the music hall with?
Gentleman friends, sir.
Oh, now you know, Nancy, don't you? That gentleman friends are sometimes inclined to take liberties with young ladies.
Oh, no, sir, not with me. I can take care of myself. When I want to.
You know, Nancy, it strikes me that you're not at all the kind of girl that your mistress should have for a housemaid.
No, sir. She's not the only one in the house, is she?
Nancy leans toward him with a suggestive smile. Gregory arches his eyebrows in surprise, then nods and grins to himself. He turns, puts a silk top hat on his head, and walks away. Carrying a walking stick, Gregory leaves the house and steps into the misty night. He tugs the collar of his coat around his neck, then starts down the deserted street with a quick, purposeful stride. Swinging his walking stick in one hand and carrying a cigarette in the other, Gregory continues down the sidewalk, his silhouette barely distinguishable in the dark. Gregory approaches a narrow cobblestone alley. He continues past, then quickly ducks into the shadows. At home, Paula lies curled on her bed, her face streaked with tears. Paula drags her head up to listen. Her mouth drops open in disbelief. She glances up at the chandelier. The flames grow dim. Her eyes wide with terror, Paula turns and stares at the flickering light. She buries her cheek against the bed, cowering in fear. Daytime. Brian sits at his desk, opening mail. He pulls out an elegant engraved invitation that reads, Lord and Lady Dalroy request the pleasure of Mr. Brian Cameron's company at a musical evening on the 12th of November at 9 o'clock. Brian sets the invitation aside, then pauses. He picks it up again and smiles to himself. Later, at the Dalroy house.
Let people find their own places for the concert, Murdoch. Just sit where they like. Those who don't care for music can go into the smoking room.
May I come in?
Oh, Brian.
Good evening. Good evening, Lady Dalroy. How are you, sir?
How are you, my boy? Nice to see you.
Am I the first to arrive? I have a little favor to ask you. Are you having a sit-down supper after the music?
Yes, and I've put you next to Laura Pritchard.
Oh, I don't like Laura Pritchard. She's got adenoids.
Nonsense. She's a most agreeable girl. And I want you to be very nice to her.
Haven't you learned yet that Mildred is an incurable matchmaker?
I'll be nice to Miss Pritchard another time. Tonight I want you to be very kind and put me next to Mrs. Anton. Will you?
Oh, it's most tiresome of you. All right.
Well, who's Mrs. Anton?
She's the niece of Alice Elquist. She used to come here as a child. Brian told me she was back in London now and married. So I invited them to come tonight. Who's Mr. Anton, by the way? What does he do? Where does he come from?
Put me next to her tonight and I'll find out for you.
She opens a note.
I'm sorry, Brian, but you'll have to sit next to the Pritchard girl after all.
The Antons can't come?
No.
Letter from her?
No, from him.
Him?
Yes, apparently she's ill. Very tiresome of her. Here, read it if you want to. I must go and order the tables. Come on, Freddie, I want you.
Lady Dalroy hands the note to Brian, who reads it with a troubled frown. Now at number 9. Wearing a long, elegant white gown with a low-cut neckline, Paula starts downstairs. She hesitates on the landing, then lifts her chin and forces herself into a nonchalant, confident expression. She pauses at the door of the drawing room, then opens the door and steps inside.
Is that you, Paula?
She jumps at the sound of her husband's voice, then approaches him from behind.
Yes.
He turns and frowns.
Why are you dressed up like that?
Because tonight is Lady Dalroy's reception.
But I sent a note.
I know.
I sent a note to say that you were not well enough.
I'm quite well enough and I want to go. Lady Dalroy was very kind to me when I was small and I'm going. I must get out of this house, meet people and see a little of what's going on in the world. I'm going to this reception, Gregory.
Well, then, I'm afraid you'll have to go alone.
Well, then, I must go alone.
Paula turns away and heads for the door. With a startled frown, Gregory whips around and finds her gone. He hurries after her.
Paula!
Paula turns back with a hopeful expression.
Paula! I didn't realize this party meant so much to you. I'll go and change immediately. You didn't really think I would let you go alone, did you?
I don't know.
I shan't be a minute.
Gregory rushes upstairs. Paula goes limp with relief. In his bedroom, Gregory starts to undress. He tosses his smoking jacket onto the bed, then unbuttons his vest. Downstairs, Paula checks her reflection in a mirror and smooths rouge onto her pale cheeks. Nancy appears in the doorway.
Come in.
Nancy stares at Paula.
Cold.
Did you ring for something, Mum?
Yes, please fetch a cab.
But I thought you would come.
Get a cab, Nancy.
Nancy pouts, then drops a reluctant curtsy.
Is the master going out too?
Yes, he is.
Paula smiles defiantly.
Please hurry.
Very good, Mum.
Nancy leaves the room. Paula beams at herself in the mirror with a pleased smile. Upstairs, Gregory starts to tuck a watch into his vest pocket, then pauses. The shadow of a cruel grin passes across his sharp features. Outside, Nancy waves down a cab.
Oi, cabbie! Oi!
Officer Williams saunters toward her. Nancy frowns and pretends to ignore him.
In a cab on your evening out, eh?
Oh, yes. I'm going out to dinner at Buckingham Palace, I am. I'm going to have a lovely evening out.
Here now, what's the matter with you?
First they're going out, then they're not. Changing all my plans. Never a word to me from him.
A horse-drawn cab pulls to a stop in front of the house.
Yeah, you better get along. They'll be out in a minute.
See you Sunday?
Perhaps.
Usual place?
Usual place.
Night?
Night.
Gregory and Paula emerge. Nancy holds the door open.
Well, draw your cloak, aren't you? It's damp. Barrow House. Good night, Nancy.
Have a nice evening, sir.
Nancy closes the door of the cab behind them. Later, at the Dalroy House, guests in gowns and tuxedos crowd the plant-filled conservatory, listening intently to a piano trio. A hawk-nosed young woman sits next to Brian, swaying to the music with a pretentious smile. Brian sighs wearily. Suddenly, Gregory and Paula appear in the doorway. Brian spots them, then sits up and cranes his neck for a better view. Paula smiles graciously, while Gregory scans the room with a stiff, tight-lipped scowl. Lady Dalroy hurries to greet the new arrivals. Her husband sits chatting with an attractive young woman. Lady Dalroy taps him sternly on the shoulder. He jumps up and follows her.
You're Paula Anton. I'm sure you don't remember me.
I do indeed, Lady Dalroy. It was at the children's party here, and there was a magician. May I introduce my husband, Lady Dalroy?
How do you do?
I hope you will forgive all the confusion, Lady Dalroy, but my wife suddenly felt much better, and we were so anxious to come.
But of course. You'll find some seats over there. Saratsky hasn't played yet. I'll see you later at supper.
Gregory and Paula head for a pair of empty seats. Lady Dalroy raises her eyebrows at Brian and nods discreetly in their direction. Brian returns the nod and observes them from several rows back, then forces his attention to Laura Pritchard as she starts to chatter. A dark-haired man in a tuxedo strides to the piano. He bows to the audience, then settles himself at the keyboard. Brian leans forward and studies Gregory's profile. Gregory feels his stare. His eyes shift uneasily. Oblivious to anything but the music, Paula watches the pianist with a contented smile. Gregory finally turns in his chair and glances behind him. He spots Brian, who turns away. Gregory's eyes grow wide with alarm. Paula notices her husband staring and leans toward him. Gregory forces his gaze back to the pianist, then his mouth drops open slightly. He glances sideways at Paula. Later, surrounded by older women wearing long gowns and expensive jewelry, Paula remains transfixed by the music. A dreamy smile lights her refined, delicate features. Gregory sits next to her, his arms folded across his chest. He slides his hand into his vest pocket and reaches for his watch, then frowns as he pulls out an empty chain. Gregory searches his other pockets in vain. His face grows hard and angry. Paula's smile dissolves into a wide-eyed, horrified gape. Gregory eyes her coldly as she bites her trembling lip and shoots a quick, nervous glance at the people around her. Finally, she turns to face her husband. Paula gazes pleadingly into his eyes, then forces herself to look down at the empty chain.
No.
Paula winces and turns her head away. Lady Dalroy shoots her a quick, disapproving frown. Gregory remains stone-faced as Paula turns back to him with a pleading shake of her head. Gregory reaches for the purse sitting in her lap. Paula tenses as Gregory feels the contents through the gauzy white fabric. His probing fingers close on a hard object. His hand freezes. Gregory frowns accusingly at Paula, who watches in disbelief. He opens the purse and reaches inside. Paula recoils as he pulls out his pocket watch. Gregory glares at her and tosses the purse back into her lap.
I didn't put it there, I swear I didn't. Will you be quiet?
Brian watches with concern as Paula struggles to regain her composure. She darts a guilty look at the disapproving faces around her, then finally collapses into tears. Everyone stares as Paula shudders with sobs. Gripping her arm, Gregory leads Paula into the aisle and toward the door. Lady Dalroy jumps up to intercept them.
Very sorry, Lady Dalroy, but I'm afraid my wife's illness has returned.
Well, can I send for a doctor?
My wife, if I can just get her home. You shouldn't have come tonight, but she was so anxious. I'm so sorry, Lady Dalroy.
Laura turns to Brian, who is gone.
I think it's the most extra...
She frowns at the empty chair beside her. Later, outside number 9, still wearing his tuxedo, Brian hides in the park behind a tree. He watches the lighted window of Paula's room, where Gregory's silhouette paces back and forth. Inside, Paula leans weakly against the bedpost.
I've tried so hard to keep it within these walls, my own house. Ah, because you would go out tonight, the whole of London knows it. If I could only get inside that brain of yours and understand what makes you do these crazy, twisted things.
Gregory, are you trying to tell me I'm insane?
It's what I'm trying not to tell myself.
But that's what you think, isn't it? That's what you've been hinting and suggesting for months now, ever since...
Since what?
Since the day I lost your brooch. Yes, that's when it all began. No, it began before that. The first day here when I found that letter.
Gregory freezes, then whirls around in controlled fury.
What letter?
The one I found among the music from that man called Bowie. Sergius Bowie, yes, I remember.
Yes, you're right. That's when it began.
Yes.
I can see you still, standing there, and saying, look at this letter, and staring at nothing.
What?
You had nothing in your hand.
What?
I was staggered, but I didn't know then how much reason I had to be.
I don't know. What reason?
I didn't know then about your mother.
What about my mother?
Your mother was mad.
Oh, Gregory.
She died in an asylum when you were a year old.
That's not true.
I've been making inquiries about Alice Alquist's sister. I've talked to the doctor who attended her. You'd like to see him?
No.
He described her symptoms to me. Do you like to hear them? Oh. It began with her imagining things, that she heard noises, footsteps, voices, and then the voices began to speak to her. And in the end, she died in an asylum with no brain at all.
No, please! Oh, no.
Paula collapses as if she'd been struck.
Now perhaps you will understand a lot of things about yourself and me. Now perhaps you will understand why I cannot let you meet people.
You
He must have been rather disappointed that you left before he could talk to you.
Oh.
Man who was sitting behind us.
Where?
Tonight. You only went there because you knew he was going to be there.
But Gregory, who?
The man who bowed to you that day at the tower. Who is he? Someone from the past? Someone you refused, perhaps?
I never met him. I have no idea who he is.
Who is he? Why is he talking my footsteps?
I don't know that he is.
You lie. Why do you lie to me?
I never lie to you.
Gregory pulls his hands away from her shoulders.
I'm sorry. I should not have said that. I know you never lie to me. I believe you. You're not lying. It's worse than lying. You've forgotten. You've forgotten him as you forget everything. But perhaps I'm wrong to try to handle this myself. The case is one for people who know about those things. Paula, we shall have visitors. And shortly.
Doctor?
Two. I believe two is the required number.
Sagging against the mantel, Paula doesn't stir as Gregory sweeps out of the room. She stares absently into the fire. For a moment, her eyes grow wide and puzzled. Then she closes them wearily. Outside, Brian ducks as Gregory steps out of the house. Again carrying his walking stick, Gregory tugs his coat collar up around his neck and starts down the street with a brisk stride. Brian watches him keenly.
Yes?
Gregory whirls around and scans the empty street behind him. He pauses, then reaches into his coat pocket and pulls out his cigarette case. He tucks a cigarette between his lips and pauses to strike a match against a metal fence. A sign reads, Number 5, Family Residence to be Let. Through a thick fog, Officer Williams walks toward him, dragging his nightstick against the railings of the fence.
Oh, it's you, Constable.
Good evening, Mr. Atkinson.
Nasty night to be out, isn't it?
Very nasty, sir. Very nasty indeed.
Williams continues past. His cigarette lit, Gregory takes a few steps, then pauses and sneaks a glance behind him. Convinced that Williams is gone, he hurries around the corner and disappears into the mist. Now he paces down the street toward the cobblestone alley. Once again, he ducks into the shadows. Gregory scans his surroundings, then drops his cigarette on the ground and slinks further into the alley. Later, the cigarette lies cold and unsmoking. Williams rushes out of the alley and meets Brian at the entrance. They stare down at the cigarette with puzzled frowns.
Where'd he go?
He didn't get past me as I came through the alley, sir.
He certainly turned in here. You must have missed him in the fog.
I'd have heard his footsteps as he passed, Mr. Cameron.
He must have gone into the rear of one of these houses, sir.
Yes, but which? Why?
You don't suppose he could have gone into his own house, do you?
If he did, sir, that's not against the law.
No, but it's against common sense. Why should a man walk out of his own house and all the way around the corner just to get back to the same place where he started from?
But the service entrance to number 9's out front. There's no way into number 9 from back here.
Well, then where did he go?
Number 5's empty. But what would he want to go into an empty house for?
I don't know, Williams. I don't know.
Now, in Paula's room, our view tilts up to the ceiling and spins around in a slow, dizzying circle. We see Paula's shadow against the wall, then the chandelier with a single flame burning. Still wearing her long white gown, Paula stares up at the ceiling and wrings her hands. The flame in the chandelier flickers and dies down. Paula backs into a corner, her eyes wide and terrified. Paula Paula hugs the wall behind her, then staggers for the door and flings it open. Elizabeth shuffles up the stairs, carrying a tray. Paula reaches out a beseeching hand as she approaches.
What is it, Mum?
I want you to help me. I'm so tired.
Oh, yes.
With a weak smile, Paula leads Elizabeth into the bedroom. The silver-haired motherly maid places the tray on Paula's bedside table. Paula watches her with wide, anxious eyes.
Elizabeth, did you turn on the gas? Did you turn on the gas anywhere downstairs just now?
Oh, I know, Mum. I've had it on in the kitchen all the evening, that's all.
So I thought it went down in there as if someone had turned it on in some other part of the house.
There's no one in the house but me, Mum. Nancy's not back yet.
Paula closes her eyes wearily.
But the gas comes in pipes, Mum. And I expect there gets more gas in the pipes at some times than there does at others.
Yes. Yes, I suppose that could explain it. Yes. Elizabeth, do you hear anything?
Hear anything?
Yes, up there, listen.
Listen to what, Mum?
Those sounds. Those noises up there.
Oh, no, woman.
Elizabeth helps her undress.
But there are sounds, aren't they? Like someone moving about. Listen, Elizabeth, listen, please.
There are no noises up there, ma'am. How could there be now? The old floor's boarded up. You know that as well as I do. No one can't get in up there. You know, ma'am, you just imagine things.
Elizabeth guides Paula to bed. Daytime. Brian sketches the layout of the houses on Thornton Square. Two doors away from number 9, number 5 reads, Empty House. A dotted line leads from Paula's front door around the corner to the back of number 5.
And into the muse.
A butler opens the front door.
Oh, Williams, come in. You're early. Get another cup, will you? Sit down. Make yourself comfortable.
Thank you, sir.
Well? Well?
Well, sir, I don't know what it means, but this morning around 3 o'clock I was standing in the corner of Thornton Square looking both ways like, and suddenly who should I see turning up out of the fog but our friend again. Coming out of the mews, it looked like.
Yes.
I managed to get a good look at him as he walked under the lamppost. Now, I tell you, Mr. Cameron, that man had been up to something.
What?
Undertake to say what exactly, but he was kind of in a mess. Clothes untidy, tie all on one side, dirt and dust all over him, even on his face.
Had he been in a fight?
Oh, he didn't look like that, sir. More as though he'd been digging in a cellar or something.
Have some coffee, Williams.
Thank you, sir. I've had my breakfast already. Had it in the kitchen at number 9, as a matter of fact.
Nancy tell you anything this morning?
You ask me, Nancy's getting ideas above her station. Seems the master told her that her mistress might be gone away for quite a long time. And that he wanted her to stay and look after him.
The master told her mistress might be going away?
That's right, sir.
Brian gets up and starts to pace.
For a long time, you said?
Yes, sir. Well, what do you think that means?
Well, from all you've told me these last weeks, I should say it could mean any one of a number of quite unpleasant things. I've got to get into that house tonight.
Not when he's there.
No. He goes out after dinner every evening.
That's right, sir.
And tonight after dinner.
Nancy says he's told her not to let her mistress see anyone.
Then you'll have to see to it that Nancy isn't home tonight.
Any little thing I can do for the yard, sir?
I thought you wouldn't mind.
It's just one thing more, though, sir.
Huh?
How do you know the lady herself will see you?
I don't know. Yes. I think there's a way.
Brian unlocks a wooden cabinet. Nighttime. Paula sits in her room with a glass of milk in one hand and a book in the other. She gulps nervously and starts to read.
As
suppose people who go every night to places of public amusement can hardly enter into the fresh garden.
Your mother was mad. Your mother was mad. Your mother was mad. Your mother was mad.
Suppose people who go every night to places of public amusement can hardly enter into the fresh garden with which an uproar is such a...
She died in an asylum. She died in an asylum with no brain at all.
You suppose people who go every night to play them.
Asylum.
Oh, snug comfort of the closed carriage, the pleasure of sitting up with companions so cheerful and friendly, the sight of the star bending fitfully through the trees, and all along the avenue.
Outside, Brian hides around the corner of the building. He watches as Gregory leaves the house and starts down the street with his usual brisk stride. Brian sneaks through the shadows and hurries up the steps of number 9. As he rings the bell, Gregory disappears around the corner. Elizabeth opens the door.
I'm sorry, sir, but the mistress won't see anyone.
Did she tell you to say that? You're Elizabeth, aren't you?
How do you know my name?
Oh, I know a lot of things about this house. You're fond of your mistress, aren't you, Elizabeth? You'd like to help her, wouldn't you? This is your chance, because I'm a friend, and that's why you're going to let me see her.
Oh, no, I don't dare, sir. I'd lose my place. I don't dare, really, I don't dare.
Paula creeps down the stairs and gazes fearfully at Brian. He smiles up at her.
He isn't here. My husband isn't here.
I know that, Mrs. Anton. It's you I want to see.
Go away, I mean, like I can't see anyone. Elizabeth, stop him. I didn't ask him to come.
Mrs. Anton, I didn't want him to come here. My name is Brian Cameron.
You mustn't come here. Go away.
Oh, not until I've given you this. Look at it. Look at it, please. Alice Alquist gave it to me years ago at Covent Garden. I was a little boy overcome with admiration.
He shows her a white glove.
Now you'll trust me, won't you?
Clutching the glove to her chest, Paula hurries upstairs into the drawing room. Brian follows her. Paula unlocks the glass curio cabinet and pulls out the autographed glove, a perfect match to Brian's. Paula compares them, then holds them up with a bright, beaming smile.
After all these years, the great admirer she used to make such a mystery of, the little boy.
Paula's smile disappears. She bows her head and starts to weep.
Tell me something, Mrs. Anton. Are you planning on going away somewhere?
Go away? Why, no, I have nowhere to go.
Her face grows tense.
Unless my husband sends me away.
She sidles away from him.
Is that why you came here? To take me away?
Are you as frightened as all that?
Oh, I'm sorry. I haven't talked to anyone for a long time. I can't talk to you either. I'm afraid.
You're afraid you're going out of your mind? Well, I'm here to prove to you that you're not. To help me do that, you've got to answer my questions. Tell me now. Where is your husband now?
Paula's gaze drifts to the chandelier. She cringes as the flame lowers.
Where's he gone?
He has taken a studio where he can work on his composing. He can't work in this house. He has to have it quiet.
Tell me, is there anyone else in the house now except us and Elizabeth?
No, why?
The gas just went down.
You saw that too.
Why, yes.
Oh, then it really happens. I thought I imagined it.
It only means that someone else has turned it on.
Oh, no, no, no. I thought that, too. But every night I've been all over the house, there's never been another light turned on. At last I can tell this to someone. Now, every night when my husband goes out...
The light goes down?
Paula freezes, then turns away.
Yes.
And then what?
Well, then I think I hear things. I watch and wait. Later on, the gas goes up again.
And he comes back?
Yes, quite soon after. Always quite soon after.
You say you think you hear things. What things?
Sounds, noises over my room.
Brian glances toward the ceiling. Now, he bounds upstairs, two at a time, and opens the door to Paula's bedroom. She follows him with a slow, weary step.
What's up there?
A whole floor of trunks and furniture.
Is that what you meant?
Yes, yes, yes. But who?
Mrs. Anton, you know, don't you? You know who's up there?
No. No.
Are you sure you don't?
No, no. How could he be?
There's an alley behind these houses. He goes in the back of number 5. That's the empty one. And then across the roof.
Why? Why?
You said there's old furniture up there.
My aunt's. And her clothes, stage costumes, trunks, all of her things.
All of her things?
Brian steps into the hallway and climbs a few stairs toward the attic, its door barricaded with wooden boards.
And they said the case was dead.
Upstairs, the cluttered, dusty attic is lit by a single flame. Wearing leather gloves, a shadowy figure rummages through a pile of women's costumes, a feather boa, a bejeweled gown. He dumps handfuls of music out of a trunk drawer, then tears apart the wood and tosses it aside. He opens a bureau drawer and pulls out a knife. Clutching it in his fist, Gregory slashes into the upholstery of a velvet chair. Gregory yanks out the stuffing and searches the dusty contents. Jaws clenched in frustration and anger, he hurls the broken chair away. Downstairs, Brian questions Paula.
Tell me, is he any weapons in the house?
He has a revolver. Why shouldn't he?
Do you know where he keeps it?
I think he has it in his desk in there.
Brian bursts into Gregory's bedroom and tries to open the lid of a wooden roll-top desk. Paula follows him in.
No. No, 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 you can't open his desk. No, you have no right to. Whoever you are, you have no right to. But he'll know what you've done. He'll think that I... What shall I say to him?
Oh. You won't have to say anything.
Oh. Brian pries it open with a letter opener and rummages through the drawers. Paula spots a piece of paper. Brian finds an empty pistol case.
Perhaps it's a good thing I came tonight.
I was right.
She unfolds the letter.
There was a letter. And it was from Sergius Bauer.
What was that? What was that name you just said?
Sergius Bauer. I found this. But my husband said I dreamed, and now it's here.
Bauer.
It's been here the whole time.
Bauer. There was a Sergius Bauer connected with Alice Alquist. He was a young pianist who played for in Prague. Let me see that. Dear Miss Alquist, I beg of you to see me just once more. I followed you to London.
Brian pulls the note given to him by Lady Dalroy from his pocket. He compares the handwriting.
Look.
Dear Lady Dalroy, this is my husband's writing.
So is this. Mrs. Anton, your husband and Sergius Bauer, one and the same person. And this letter from Sergius Bauer to Alice Alquist was written 2 days before her murder.
But he said there wasn't any letter. He said I was going out of my mind.
You're not going out of your mind. You're slowly and systematically being driven out of your mind.
Why? Why?
Perhaps because you found this letter know too much. Or because then he would have control of your property, of this house, and could search in the open instead of the dark like this.
A search? What is that a search for?
For the things for which Alice Alquist was murdered. Her jewels.
I have her jewels?
They're the jewels you didn't know she had. Famous jewels. Jewels for which he was searching that night when he was frightened away by hearing someone come down the stairs. Someone he never saw. A little girl.
Me.
Paula mouths the word, me. Me? She pushes away from Brian and starts to pace.
That he was here that night, but he never knew her. You're wrong. You're wrong. You're making a mistake. I know him. He's my husband. I've lived in the same house with him. You're talking about the man I'm married to.
Mrs. Anton, there's not a detail of the Alquist case that I don't know, and unless I'm more mistaken than I've ever been in my life, The man called Sergius Bauer has a wife living in Prague now.
The flame in a lamp goes up.
So you see, Mrs. Anton, he must have planned the whole thing step by step from that night.
Oh, if that were true, then from the beginning there would have been nothing. Nothing real from the beginning.
I'm sorry to take everything away from you like this. But you must believe me. Your whole life depends on what you're going to do now. Nothing less than your whole life. Don't you see the way everything fits in?
Brian notices the lamp.
Gas. How long has it been up?
Brian shoots a quick glance at the ceiling. In the attic, Gregory puts on his dusty coat and silk top hat and climbs a ladder to a skylight. He pushes open the window with his walking stick, then stops to brush himself off. As moonlight streams into the attic, something gleams from the pile of costumes. Gregory pauses. With a curious frown, he climbs back down the ladder. He leans over and touches the fabric. Gregory tosses aside his walking stick and kneels down, then uncovers the rest of the costume, a gown with large jewels sewn into the elaborate embroidered bodice. Gregory yanks off his leather gloves, pries the jewel out of its setting, and holds it up to the light, turning it this way and that. With an eager, predatory grin, he searches the rest of the costume and removes another jewel. Gregory lifts the entire costume and holds it up. Behind him, the portrait of Alice Alquist leans tilted against a wall. In it, dressed as Empress Theodora, Alice Alquist wears the exact same costume. Downstairs, Elizabeth waits by the front door with an anxious frown. She hands Brian his coat and hat as he leaves.
Elizabeth, whatever happens tonight, have her welfare in mind.
You can count on me, sir. But what am I going to say to the master when he comes back?
He won't come back anymore, Elizabeth.
Brian slips out. Elizabeth closes the door behind him. Outside, Brian jogs to the corner of the building and glances down the street in the direction of number 5. In the house, Paula trudges out of Gregory's bedroom with weary steps. She runs her hand thoughtfully along the banister, then hurries into her bedroom and closes the door behind her. In the hallway, a few yards away from Paula's bedroom, the attic door opens. Gregory peers out from behind the wooden boards. He scans the hallway, then yanks at the bolt. Dust flies into the air as the door swings open. Gregory closes the attic door behind him, then the false door made of wooden boards. Covered with dust, he starts downstairs and pauses to gaze covetously at the enormous egg-sized jewels in his hand. Gregory trots down the remainder of the stairs and raises his eyes toward Paula's closed door. With a steely gaze, he hurries toward it.
Paula?
Inside, Paula sits in the dark. Gregory rushes into his bedroom. Gregory takes off his top hat and hurries to his bed in the center of the room. He lays the jewels down gently and shrugs out of his coat. Outside, Brian keeps watch on the alley. Gregory picks up the jewels again and crosses the room to his desk. He pulls a key from his pocket and inserts it into the lock. With a puzzled frown, Gregory tests the lock. His key spins loosely. Gregory lifts the lid and examines the wood splintered by the letter opener. His dark eyes blazing furiously, Gregory closes the lid and stalks out of his bedroom. He bursts through Paula's door. She stands by the fireplace, glaring at him, her face twisted with hate and loathing. Gregory pauses, then steps inside.
What are you doing?
I was lying down.
fully dressed? Did you hear what I said?
Yes.
Then why don't you answer?
I don't know.
You don't know. Do you know anything about anything you do? I will be obliged if you will come with me to my room.
Paula's angry stare dissolves into wide-eyed fear. Shoulders hunched, she trails obediently after her husband. She stops at the door of his bedroom. Gregory shoves past her and marches inside. Paula shuffles across the carpet with slow, uncertain steps.
Sit down in this chair, Paula. You know what you remind me of as you walk across the room? Have you ever seen anyone walking in their sleep? But you're not asleep. No, you're not asleep. You can't deceive me. You're awake, fully awake. Or you would not have broken open my desk! Now be careful how you answer. Why did you open my desk?
I didn't open your desk.
Nancy?
Nancy's out.
Who then? Elizabeth?
No, it wasn't Elizabeth. Please don't question me anymore. Let me go back.
No. Stay there, Paula. Why did you open my desk?
I didn't open your desk.
His hand curls into a claw.
Why did you open my desk, Paula?
I didn't open it. It was he. He opened it.
What are you talking about? Who is he?
A man. A man who came to see me.
When?
When you were out.
Who let him in?
Elizabeth.
Elizabeth!
Elizabeth hesitates, then steps inside.
Yes, sir?
Who was the man who came to see your mistress while I was out?
What man, sir?
Come, Elizabeth, you must have answered the bell.
No one was here, sir, while you were out.
He turns to Paula, who stares at the maid in disbelief.
But Elizabeth... But you saw him. You opened the door for him yourself. Elizabeth, say it, Elizabeth, say it.
No, ma'am. I didn't see anyone at all.
Paula's gaze darts from Elizabeth to Gregory and back. She blinks in confusion.
He was here. I know it. I know it. When he was here, I know.
Gregory and Elizabeth stare at her with somber, curious frowns. Paula goes to the desk, then turns back and dissolves into tears.
I saw him.
You see how it is, Elizabeth?
Yes, sir. I see just how it is.
Elizabeth withdraws from the room.
I couldn't have dreamed it. Did I dream? Did I really, really dream? Dream.
Yes, Paula, you dreamed it. You dreamed all day long.
Are you telling me that I've dreamed?
Everything, Paula.
All that happened.
All that did not happen.
Then it's true. My mind is going.
Haven't I told you, Paula?
It was a dream.
Like all the rest.
Then take me away. I can't fight it anymore. It was a dream.
Paula doubles over. Yes. Brian appears in the doorway.
Was I any part of this curious dream of yours, Mrs. Anton?
You.
Perhaps my presence here might help you to recall it.
Who the devil are you?
Apparently a mere figment of your wife's imagination.
How did you get into this house?
Through the skylight. Like you.
He holds up the costume.
And down these stairs. You made it very easy.
Would you be kind enough to tell me what you're doing here?
Mrs. Anton, don't you think you'd better go to bed? You must be very tired.
Don't you think you'd better explain your business, sir?
Well, as a mere figment, as a mere ghost existing in your wife's mind, I could hardly be said to have any business.
Paula, go to your room. Please, Paula.
Gregory takes her firmly by the hand and ushers her out of the room. Paula turns at the door and shoots Brian a questioning gaze. Gregory leads her to her room and shuts the door.
So you found them, after all.
was right about you. I knew from the first moment I saw you that you were dangerous to me.
I knew from the first moment I saw you that you were dangerous to her.
I should have followed my instinct about you, as you followed yours.
I thought she was Alice Alquist, come back to life. I didn't know then that she was walking with Sergius Bauer.
I'm afraid I don't know your name.
Cameron, shall I tell you my address, too?
No, I think I can guess it.
So we've both ended our search tonight. And this is where Alice Alquist hid them, where all the world could see them. And yet no one would know where they were except the man who gave them to her, watching from the royal box. Pretty clever of her to put four priceless jewels among a lot of paste imitations.
For the last time, what do you want of me?
The jewels? Injustice? How does it feel, Bauer, to have planned and killed and tortured for something, and then to know it's been for nothing?
For nothing?
Gregory pulls out the pistol. Brian struggles with Gregory for the gun and forces him to drop it. Gregory breaks away and sprints into the attic. Brian follows him. Paula hurries out of her room and sees the gun on the floor.
Elizabeth! Elizabeth! What is it, Mum? I thought I heard a shot.
Elizabeth hurries to the front door.
Help! Mr. Williams, come quick! Up there!
The constable leaves Nancy on the sidewalk and runs upstairs. Nancy rushes in after him. Paula points him toward the attic. Downstairs, Miss Thwaites walks up to the front door, which stands open.
Anybody at home?
She pauses, then walks inside. Upstairs, Paula stands on the stairwell, peering anxiously at the attic door. She tilts her head curiously to one side. As if in a trance, she starts upstairs with slow, measured steps. From below, Elizabeth and Nancy watch as she disappears into the attic. Upstairs, Paula winds her way through piles of clutter, gazing at her aunt's dusty belongings. Brian emerges from an inner room, shrugging on his suit jacket. He closes the door behind him.
Well, Mrs. Anton, you believe me now. Perhaps you'd like to see these things. They cost a woman's life. They cost you something, too.
Paula glances at the jewels in his hand, then reaches for the door behind him. Brian tries to block it, then relents and opens it for her. Inside, Gregory sits in a chair, his arms and legs bound tightly with rope.
I want to speak to my husband.
Mrs. Anton, I don't think that's advisable.
I want to speak to him alone.
I'm afraid that's impossible.
I assure you I'm quite helpless.
Please.
Well, I'll be waiting on the stairs.
Brian and Constable Williams walk out. With her eyes glued on her husband, Paula shuts the door behind them.
No, go and see if he's listening.
Paula bolts the door shut.
He's not listening.
You have great confidence in him. He told you a lot of things about me, didn't he?
Yes.
They were lies.
Why should he lie to me?
Because he's in love with you. I can tell. I feel it.
Do you? Do you really, Gregory, or shall I call you Sergius?
So he told you that, too. Well, what of it? Have you never heard of an artist taking a stage name? Well, Sergius Bauer was mine. That was a part of my life I didn't care to tell you about. I was a failure then. They don't hang a man for that, do they?
No, they don't hang a man for that.
Paula, you remember our first days. You remember Italy.
There have been times when I thought I only dreamed those days.
Come closer, Paula.
She steps toward him slowly.
Closer.
Paula stands over Gregory, gazing down into his face.
Look into my eyes. If I ever meant anything to you, and I believe I did, then help me, Paula. Give me another chance.
Paula searches his eyes with an uncertain gaze.
Look, in the drawer of that cupboard over there is a knife. Get it and cut me free.
He glances up at the ceiling. Paula follows his gaze and sees the open skylight.
Be quick, Paula. Get me the knife. Cut me free. Will you get it, Paula? Will you get it for me?
Yes, I'll get it. I'll get it for you.
Hurry, Paula.
There's no knife here.
Yes, I put it there. Look.
I don't see any knife.
I put it there tonight.
No, it isn't here. You must have dreamed you put it there.
She holds up the knife.
Are you suggesting that this is a knife I hold in my hand? Have you gone mad, my husband? Or is it I who am mad? Yes, of course, that's it. I am mad.
She tosses it away.
I'm always losing things and hiding things, and I can never find them. I don't know where I put them. That was a knife, wasn't it? And I have lost it. I must look for it, mustn't I? If I don't find it, you'll put me in the madhouse. Where could it be now? Perhaps it's behind this picture. Yes, it must be here. No, where shall I look now? Perhaps I put it over here. Yes, I must have done that.
She opens a drawer and sees the cameo.
My brooch. The brooch I lost at the tower. I found it at last, you see, but it doesn't help you, does it? And I'm trying to help you, aren't I? Trying to help you to escape. How can a mad woman help her husband to escape?
But you're not mad.
Yes, I am mad, as my mother was mad.
No, Paula, that wasn't true. Help me.
If I were not mad, I could have helped you. Whatever you had done, I could have pitied and protected you. But because I am mad, I hate you. Because I am mad, I have betrayed you. And because I am mad, I'm rejoicing in my heart without a shred of pity, without a shred of regret, watching you go with glory in my heart. Mr. Cameron, come. Come, Mr. Cameron, take this man away. Take this man away.
You ready? Quite ready.
Brian unties the rope that binds Gregory to the chair. He stands up and walks toward Paula, who stands with her back turned. His eyes glitter madly.
I don't ask you to understand me. Between us all the time were those jewels. Like a fire in my brain that separated us. Those jewels which I wanted all my life. I don't know why.
The cab is coming, Mr. Cameron.
Gregory forces a weak smile.
Goodbye, Paula.
Bye, Gregory.
With his hands tied behind his back, Gregory walks out of the attic, followed closely by Constable Williams. Downstairs, Nancy and Miss Thwaites rush to the front door, which is patrolled by two other constables. A cab rolls to a stop. Gregory nods at Elizabeth and leers at Nancy, who shrinks under his gaze. Gregory climbs into the cab. Williams climbs into the front seat with the driver, and the cab rolls away. Now, Brian and Paula emerge onto the roof. Paula gazes up at the moon. Clouds skid across the night sky.
This night will be a long night.
But it will end. It's starting to clear. In the morning when the sun rises, sometimes it's hard to believe there ever was a night. You'll find that, too. Let me come here and see you and talk to you. Perhaps I can help somehow.
You're very kind.
Miss Thwaites arrives as Paula touches his arm.
Well?
The end. This film has been described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Boston. Described by Leslie Rufoli. Descriptions read by Margot Stage. Major funding for DVS is provided by the United States Department of Education. For more information about DVS, call toll-free 1-800-333-1203. Or write to our email address, dvs@wgbh.org.